Our lesson tonight is about dealing with stress, and it's basically a combination of the sessions that we had yesterday. Now, yesterday we had a little bit of a cooler name for it. We called it Trick or Retreat, which, because it was on Halloween, isn't that great? One of our students came up with that name, and the way we tied that in was, when you are faced with stress, do you have tricks to deal with it, or do you retreat away from it? So we had sessions here, like I said earlier, at the church building. We did some team games to work on stress and working as a team. One of the games that we played, we took mouse traps, and we had two teams, and they had to set the mouse traps and make a circle out of them, and then set them off, and they just flew everywhere. It was awesome. If you ever want to laugh really hard, watch a bunch of college kids try to figure out how to set a mouse trap. Now, full disclosure, I had to Google how to do it, so I can't say that much, but it was really fun. We got to do some stress relief activities. We had a little art station that they got to do with Cecily, or we went axe throwing, which if you've never tried axe throwing as a stress reliever, I would highly recommend it. It's great. You know, when you can stick it in there, it's awesome. When you don't stick it in there, it's kind of sad. But, you know, I think when we were there, everybody stuck at least one axe. So, but we had a great day yesterday. So we spent the day talking about how we can deal with stress, both by ourselves and how to help each other with stress. And I wanted to talk about this because college is a stressful time. When I was in college, I remember adults, or grown-ups, as we like to call them, would say things like, man, I wish I could go back to college. You know, I thought I was stressed then. I had no idea. And I'm thinking, really? No, do you want to go back to finals week? If you want to go back to finals week and do study for finals, then props to you, but I did not want to do that. I'm just 2 years out now, and no way do I want to go back and do finals week. But our college kids are stressed, and even the ones who aren't actually in college are stressed because it's a very stressful time. You have a lot of change going on in your life. So I wanted to figure out some things that we could do to help them deal with that stress. So tonight we're going to go over the same things that we did yesterday, and basically we're going to look at examples from the Bible on how different biblical characters handled different kinds of stress and the different ways they did it. The first one we're going to look at is Elijah. If you have your Bibles, go ahead and turn to 1 Kings chapter 19, verses 1 through 4. 1 Kings 19, 1 through 4. Now Ahab told Jezebel everything Elijah had done and how he had killed all the prophets by the sword. So Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah to say, "May the gods deal with me, be ever it so severely, if by this time tomorrow I do not make your life like that of one of them." Elijah was so afraid and ran for his life. When he came to Beersheba in Judah, he left his servant there, while he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness. He came to a broom bush, sat down under it, and prayed that he might die. "I have had enough, Lord," he said. "Take my life. I am no better than my ancestors." So a little bit of backstory here. This is after Elijah has gone up against the 450 prophets of Baal. So he challenged them to like a god off, and surprise, God wins, and utterly set the altar on fire, and then Elijah went and killed all of these prophets of Baal. So Ahab, the king, goes and tells Jezebel, the queen, what Elijah's done, and Jezebel is very upset and threatens to kill him. So he is literally running for his life. Imagine what it must be like to literally run for your life. And running, and you can't stop, because if you stop, they're going to catch you, and they're going to kill you. I've never had the experience of literally running for my life, but I do understand a little bit the concept of feeling like you can't stop. You're so stressed, you have so much going on, you feel like if you stop, you're going to fail. There are going to be dire consequences to stopping. And that's a pretty big concept in college. It feels like when you're in college that if you are not actively working on something, if you're not actively doing a homework or writing a paper or studying, you are procrastinating. It doesn't matter what you're doing. If you are not actively working, there is always something for you to be doing for your schoolwork. And I got to thinking, why does it feel like that? So I broke down some numbers. Let's assume for a normal college student that they're taking 15 credit hours. That's about average. Let's say that they're healthy and they get 8 hours of sleep each night. Let's say they eat 3 meals a day. And let's say they go to church, all three services, Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night. Now, in each week, there's 168 hours in each week. Now, you may not know this, but for each credit hour that you take in a college class, you are expected to spend 3 to 4 hours outside of class working on that material. So for some classes, that's a way overestimation. My introduction to college class, you know, I maybe spent 30 minutes a week on it. But my organic chemistry labs, I was spending 8, 9, 10 hours a week per credit hour on that class. Now let's assume each meal takes about an hour. So whether that's going to a restaurant, fixing your food, eating it, we'll say about an hour. And then let's just say 4 hours each week you're traveling, whether that's driving to campus or walking to class or whatever. So we take 168 hours in the week minus 15 hours in class, 60 hours outside of class work, 56 hours of sleep, 21 hours of eating, 4 hours for church, and 4 hours traveling. Who can do that math? How many hours do you end up with in the week that are not accounted for? 8 hours a week. 1.14 hours a day. Now, what is not in that list? That list does not include a job. That doesn't include having any social time. For those of you who have college students who have gone away, that doesn't include coming home to visit your family. This is the bare necessities to get through college. So obviously, the math doesn't add up. So what are you going to do? You've got to take time from somewhere. I can tell you, I don't know a single college student who sleeps 8 hours. They just don't do it. And it killed me when I was in college, but they just don't do it because they don't have time. You could multitask. You can and do your homework while you eat. I did that all the time. You know, grab some food, come back to the library, study and eat. A lot of students, unfortunately, don't go to church because it's a time suck for them, and they think, if I stop working on this stuff, I'm going to fail. It's a big problem. So when we look back at Elijah, he was completely and utterly overwhelmed. And that's a feeling, like I said, I've never been running for my life, but I know the feeling of being overwhelmed and feeling like you can't stop. And the next few verses show us how he dealt with that. Starting in verse 5. Then he lay down under the bush and fell asleep. All at once an angel touched him and said, "Get up and eat." He looked around, and there by his head was some bread baked over hot coals and a jar of water. He ate and drank and then lay down again. The angel of the Lord came back a second time and touched him and said, "Get up and eat, for the journey is too great for you." So he got up and ate and drank. Strengthened by that food, he traveled 40 days and 40 nights until he reached Horeb, the mountain of God. Moral of the story, never underestimate the power of a nap and a snack. As funny as it sounds, the thing that Elijah needed to do to deal with the stress of feeling like he can't stop was to stop. He was probably exhausted and malnourished because he was running for his life. I asked my college kids yesterday, have you ever skipped a meal because you had an assignment? You had to work on something? So that's basically the entirety of finals week. You know, you just stop eating. You got to study. You know, everyone has their own way of taking a break when they're in school. When I was in school, I was involved in music. I did the marching band my freshman year, and then all through the rest of the 4 years, I was in the percussion ensemble. That was a really great way for me because I could go and, you know, spend hours and hours and hours doing chemical engineering stuff, and then I knew at least 1 hour a week, okay, I get to go do music, and I'm not going to be thinking about laminar flow for at least an hour, and I can go do music, and it's just a break. So when you're dealing with being overwhelmed and feeling like you can't stop, sometimes the thing you need to do is to stop, is to find something that you can do to break away. This shows us that sometimes that stopping is what we need. The next way we can deal with stress is with a little help from my friends. Sometimes stress is too much for us to handle by ourselves. And there are times when Christianity, as a whole, or the church, is a team sport. Now, don't get me wrong. You are responsible for getting yourself to heaven. But I think the church, by design, was built so that we are here to support each other and help each other through hard times. Let's look at Exodus chapter 17, verses 8 through 13. Then Amalek came and fought with Israel at Rephidim. So Moses said to Joshua, "Choose for us men and go out and fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the staff of God in my hand." So Joshua did as Moses told him and fought with Amalek while Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. Whenever Moses held up his hand, Israel prevailed, and whenever he lowered his hand, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands grew weary. So they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it, while Aaron and Hur held up his hands, one on one side and the other on the other side. So his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. And Joshua overwhelmed Amalek and his people with the sword. This is a really interesting story. I love it because it directly shows how friends helping in a stressful situation, and it's not, they didn't do anything super hard, but they helped them out. And little bit of background, this is during Israel's wandering in the wilderness. They've been to Sinai, gotten the instructions, and they're just wandering around, and they're grumbling, as the Israelites tend to do. And think about the mindset of Moses. Think about how Moses grew up, how he brought them out of Israel. Now they're wandering around in the desert. He's dealing with these Israelites. He is exhausted, not both physically but mentally. He's got to be. And then they're having this fight with the Amaleks. And in this passage, it doesn't really say why they're fighting with Amalek. They're just in a battle. So they're walking around. Oh, goodness, we got to fight. And they're fighting. And they're having to do this fight. Now, we also don't know how Moses figured out that holding up the staff worked. So I kind of imagine like he was like, "Yeah, go get him. Yeah, this is going pretty well." And then he stopped and was like, "Wait. Oh, hey, all right." I mean, we're not told how he did that, but he realizes that, okay, when he's holding his staff up, Israel is winning. Now, there's an interesting thing in this story. Aaron and Hur are up there on the mountain with him, or up on the overlook with him. Moses doesn't actually ask for help. Moses is holding up the staff, and they realize that Israel wins when Moses is holding up the staff, and then Moses gets tired, and then it talks about how they bring a stone and set it under him, and they support his hands. But he didn't ask for that. Aaron and Hur came to him and helped him out without even being asked. And it wasn't even really that hard of a thing for them to do. I mean, I can't imagine it was super hard for them to go get a rock and set it down under Moses. And then Moses is, you know, sitting like this, holding his hands up. So they just got to, you know, hold their hands, you know, right here. It's not that hard for them. But think about how much that little bit of support meant to Moses. Them holding up his hands, a simple thing for them, helped Israel to win this battle. Let's look at another story, another guy who got help from his friends. Let's look at Job. Job is a really interesting book. Job is an upright man, a good follower of God, really good dude. And then Satan convinces God to let Satan hurt Job. And God's like, okay, I think he's gonna hold up. So Satan goes, and in a matter of minutes, Job loses his livestock, all of his servants, all of his children. In a matter of minutes. Job still doesn't sin. Through all that, his wife just tells him, you know, curse God and die. Satan goes and attacks his body. He gets sores all over his body. And then his three friends show up. And when his friends show up, he's in such a bad shape that they don't even really recognize him. He's that bad off. Now, a good portion of the book of Job is his friends actually giving bad advice. That's not what I want to focus on. I want to focus on Job chapter 2, verse 13. Job 2, 13. Says, and they sat with him on the ground 7 days and 7 nights, and no one spoke a word to him, for they saw that his suffering was great. Man, I love that. When they get there and they realize what kind of a shape Job is in, they don't try to talk. What can you say to someone who has lost that much that quickly? Who is in such a bad shape that you don't even recognize your friend. I mean, they're friends. They didn't even recognize him when they showed up. So all they do is just sit there with him. Sometimes when someone is stressed, they might not ask you to help, but you can tell. You can tell that they are struggling, and they just need you to literally be there. You don't have to have the right thing to say or do the right thing. You just have to literally be there. Because sometimes that's all it needs. That's all it takes. I picked these two stories because it shows two different ways that we can help our friends. Sometimes it's physical, like literally propping someone up. And sometimes it is just by being there and just being there for them. But whatever the situation calls for, we are supposed to be there for our friends. I think that is part of the design of the church, is that we are there to support each other. We have all these verses that talk about that. I'm going to read through them quickly. Proverbs 17:17. A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. Galatians 6:2. Carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. Romans 12:15. Rejoice with those who rejoice, weep with those who weep. 1 John 4:11. Beloved, if God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. 1 Thessalonians 5:11. Therefore, encourage one another and build one another up, just as you are doing. And Ecclesiastes 4:9-12. Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their toil. For if they fall, one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him who is alone when he falls, and has not another to lift him up. Again, if two lie together, they keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? And though a man might prevail against one who is alone, two will withstand him. A threefold cord is not quickly broken. I love this passage because it spends like 90% of the time talking about two. You know, two are better than one. Two can withstand against someone trying to prevail against them. And then right at the very end, it says, a threefold cord is not easily broken. And I remember reading that as a kid, and I'm like, I thought we were talking about two people. Why are we talking about three now? That's just confusing. But I think the point of that passage, I think there's lots of interpretations, but one of the ways that I like to read this is that two is great. Supporting your friends is great. Leaning on your friends is great. But how much stronger will you all be if you incorporate God into that mix? If you let God be the third cord, be the third strand in your cord. Let's talk about prayer. Isn't prayer just, in general, an awesome concept? Think about what God has built for us in prayer. That we can talk directly to Him. We can go to Him with our stresses, our struggles. We can thank Him. We can ask Him for things. And it works. I mean, take 5 seconds and think, have I ever prayed for something and it was answered with yes and I got what I asked for? How long does it take to think of something when your prayers were answered by God? It takes me about a second, and I can think of, 10,000 things that God has done for me because I asked for them in prayer. God has built this way for us to talk to Him, and it's amazing. One of the most stressful times in my life was in my junior and senior year of college. I was trying to figure out, what am I going to do? I thought, am I going to get a job? Can I get a job? Hey, maybe I want to go to grad school. I spent 2 months thinking I was going to go get a PhD. That didn't happen, but I didn't know what I was going to do. Where are we going to live? What city are we going to live in? What state are we going to live in? Can I get a job here? I don't know. Probably not. There's not that many chemical engineers in Cookeville. If we do live here, how are we going to get a house? What house are we going to live in? Are we going to rent? Are we going to get an apartment? Are we going to buy a house? Oh my goodness, I'm only 20 years old, 19 years old, I can't buy a house. I don't know how to do that. No one prepares you for how to buy a house, just for the record, in case anybody's wondering. They don't tell you how to do it. You really just have to figure it out on your own. It was one of the most stressful times of my life because I didn't know what was going to happen. I just had to wait and see. And prayer is something that we can turn to in times like that. When we are stressed, or when we're anxious, that's what prayer is for. Let's look at a story. Let's look at 1 Samuel chapter 1. Let's talk about Hannah. So Hannah is one of two wives of this guy named Elkanah. The other wife's name is Peninnah. Now, Peninnah had multiple children. Hannah did not have any. Now, keep in mind, this is a time period where not being able to have children was a serious problem for a woman. That was like their job was to have children. And Hannah did not have children. And Peninnah makes it a zillion times worse by just being brutal to Hannah. How could you not have kids? It's not that hard. And Hannah still can't have kids. So them being Jewish, they would go to Jerusalem each year to sacrifice and to pray. Now each year Hannah would go, and her goal when she was going to Jerusalem was to pray for a child. And we don't know how long she did this, but it was several years. The text does say that it was years plural. So let's read verses 10 through 16. She was deeply distressed and prayed to the Lord and wept bitterly. And she vowed a vow and said, O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look upon the affliction of your servant and remember me and not forget your servant, but will give to your servant a son, then I will raise him to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor shall touch his head. And she continued praying before the Lord. Eli observed her mouth. Hannah was speaking in her heart, only her lips moved, and her voice was not heard. Therefore Eli took her to be a drunken woman. And Eli said to her, How long will you go on being drunk? Put your wine away from you. But Hannah answered, No, my lord, I am a woman troubled in spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but I have been pouring out my soul before the Lord. Do not regard your servant as a worthless woman, for all along I have been speaking out of my great anxiety and vexation. Talk about anxiety. Hannah prayed so hard and so earnestly and out of so much anxiety that they thought she was drunk. And Eli comes up and he's like, why are you drunk in the temple? Like, that's not okay. And Hannah's like, no, I'm just praying. I'm praying this hard. This is how badly I want this. Have you ever prayed for something for years? Let's assume that it's 5 years that they kept going to Jerusalem and praying. 5 years is a long time to want something. How many times do you think during those 5 years Hannah thought, it's just not supposed to happen? It's not going to happen. I would assume she thought about it several times, but it doesn't change how she handled the situation. She still went and she still prayed earnestly. It may not have been over the course of 5 years, but most of us have probably experienced something similar of needing or wanting something from God and not understanding why we can't have it. Why, God, why isn't this working out? I don't understand. But despite all that anxiety, Hannah still went and prayed. And spoiler alert, God answered her prayers. God gave her Samuel, who went on to be one of the most influential prophets in the Old Testament. The other awesome part about this story is in chapter 2. So the start of chapter 2 is Hannah giving a prayer to God of thanks. And then it goes on to talk about Samuel. And then right at the very end of chapter 2, it says that Hannah had other children after Samuel. Anytime I've prayed for something like that, consistently, God answers more than I ever could have thought. I think back to, like I was talking about earlier, in my senior year of college, I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know, I literally did not know where I was going to live. You know, I knew I could go back and live with my parents, but I didn't know if I was going to get a job. I didn't know if I was going to have to move states. I did not know what was going to happen. And never in a million years did I think I would be able to be in the position that I'm in now. Able to live in Cookeville. I love Cookeville. It's awesome. Able to be here at this congregation with you all. Able to work with this college ministry. Able to have a job that I love and is very fulfilling. It's amazing how we doubt God. We think, I'm praying for this. Just make it work. And then God's like, okay, just be patient. And then he finally answers our prayers, and look what you get. Look at how awesome it is when God answers our prayers. Let's look at one final story. Now, this is what prompted this lesson. It's in Luke chapter 22. 39 through 44. I don't remember who it was. It was a few weeks ago. Somebody was reading this as the thought for the Lord's Supper. And I'll read it real quickly again. "And he came out and went, as was his custom, to the Mount of Olives. And the disciples followed him. And when he came out to the place, he said to them, 'Pray that you may not enter into temptation.' And he withdrew from them about a stone's throw and knelt down and prayed, saying, 'Father, if you are willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done.' And there appeared to him an angel from heaven, strengthening him. And being in agony, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat became like great drops of blood falling down to the ground." Now, there's several things in this story. First off, Jesus knows what he's going to do. We know how stressed he is, or we can imagine how stressed he is. He brings his friends with him. He relied on his friends in this stressful time. An angel comes and comforts him, like in the story of Elijah. And then the sweat drops of blood. Now, you may have heard this before, but the sweat drops of blood is an actual thing. It's called hematohidrosis. Yes, hematohidrosis. It's an actual phenomenon where the blood vessels in your skin rupture, and then it mixes sweat with your blood. It's very rare, but it's sometimes seen in conditions of extreme stress. So like soldiers before battle, there's records of people during the Blitz of London doing this, or men on death row. Think about the desperation and the stress that Jesus is under here. You know, with a few exceptions, Jesus generally keeps his calm, I think. I mean, there are some times, you know, when he overthrows the tables in the temple, but like generally, Jesus keeps his cool. Jesus is not keeping his cool here. Jesus is very upset. Jesus is very stressed, so stressed that he is sweating blood. I've never been that stressed. But we see the ultimate example of how we are supposed to deal with stress when it is that extreme. Prayer gave Jesus an outlet to deal with unimaginable stress. Is that how you deal with your stress? When you're stressed, how many things do you have to try before you think, maybe I should pray about this? In my experience, my stress levels are inversely proportional to how much I pray. So that means the less I pray, the more stressed I am. The more I pray, the less stressed I am. It's fascinating. Anytime I get really stressed, I think, I haven't been praying very much. You know, and I will say, as far as going leaning on someone, that's when a wife or a spouse is amazing. Because I can tell Cecily, I'm really stressed, and she'll say, "Have you been praying very much?" "No, I haven't." And then you start praying, and it's amazing how much of a difference it makes when you start consistently praying about your stress. And that's what's so beautiful about prayer, is it's designed to be therapeutic. It's designed because God knew we needed to talk. But even more than that, it's designed for us to talk when we don't know how to talk. Romans 8:26, "Likewise the Spirit helps us in our weakness, for we do not know what to pray for as we ought. But the Spirit himself intercedes for us with groanings too deep for words." I love that verse. Because I feel like when we read that verse, or when I read that verse, I'm like, I know exactly what that means. I don't have to have that verse explained to me. I know what it's like to not be able to talk about what I'm feeling. I just groan. And that's what the Spirit is there for. The Spirit is there to help us when we can't talk about what's stressing us out. The Spirit is there to help us with our stress and with our prayer. We've talked about how to take care of ourselves, how we're supposed to support each other, and how important prayer is. But if I can leave you with one thing tonight about dealing with stress, I want it to be 1 Thessalonians 5:17. It's real easy. You don't even have to turn for it. It's three words. Pray without ceasing. When you are stressed, pray without ceasing. When you are happy, pray without ceasing. Always pray without ceasing. When you're stressed and you're praying to God, you will be amazed at the things that he can do for you. Tonight, you might be stressed. You probably are. I've got a little bit of stress. I'm sure everybody's got a little bit of stress. Maybe you've been stressed for a long time. We have an opportunity tonight for you to come to God with your stress and with your anxiety. Maybe you need to be baptized for the remission of your sins. I can guarantee you will never be less stressed than when you come up out of that water. Maybe you need to come and ask for prayers from your church, from your team, to help you with your stress. You have that opportunity tonight as we stand and sing.